Translation. Sri Siddha Goswami said, while traveling on a pilgrimage, Vidura received knowledge of the destination of the self from the great sage Maitreya, and then returned to Hastinapur. He became as well versed in the subject as he desired. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Vidura, one of the prominent figures in the history of the Mahabharata. He was conceived by Vyasadeva in the womb of the maidservant of Ambika, mother of Maharaj Pandu. He is the incarnation of Yamaraj. Being cursed by Manduka Muni, he was to become a Sudra. The story is narrated as follows. Once upon a time, the state police caught some thieves who had concealed themselves in the hermitage of Manduka Muni. The police constable, as usual, arrested all the thieves and Manduka Muni along with them. The magistrate specifically punished the Muni to death by being pierced with a lance. When he was just to be pierced, the news reached the king, and he at once stopped the act on consideration of his being a great Muni. The king personally begged the Muni's pardon for the mistake of his men, and the saint at once went to Yamaraj, who prescribes the destiny of the living beings. Yamaraj, being questioned by the Muni, replied that the Muni, in his childhood, pierced an ant with a sharpened straw, and for that reason he was put into difficulty. The Muni thought it unwise on the part of Yamaraj that he was punished for his childhood innocence, and thus the Muni cursed Yamaraj to become a Shudra, and this Shudra incarnation of Yamaraj was known as Vidura. The Sudra brother of Dhritarashtra and Maharaj Pandu. But this Sudra son of the Kuru dynasty was equally treated by Bhishma Dev along with his other nephews, and in due course, Vidura was married with a girl who was also born in the womb of a Sudrani by a Brahmana. Although Vidura did not inherit the property of his father, the brother of Bhishma Dev, still, he was given sufficient state property of Dhritarashtra, the elder brother of Vidura. Vidura was very much attached to his elder brother, and all along he tried to guide him on the right path. During the fratricidal war of Kukshetra, Vidura repeatedly implored his elder brother to do justice to the sons of Pandu, but Duryodhan did not like such interference by his uncle, and thus he practically insulted Vidura. This resulted in Vidura's leaving home for pilgrimage and taking instruction from Maitreya. Translation and verse once again. This chapter, Dhritarashtra quits home. It's a very nice chapter, actually. The whole chapter is wonderful. Translation again. Sri Sutta Goswami said, while traveling on a pilgrimage, Vidura received knowledge of the destination of the self from the great sage Maitreya, and then returned to Hastinapur. He became as well versed in the subject as he desired. Om Agyanitimarandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshuh Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Nena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapatantikam Namahom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Sri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve gauravani pracharine nivashesha sunyavadi paschachati shatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaura Bhaktavinda Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhaiva Cha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So I don't have much time, but I'm going to elaborate on this verse a little bit, and then I'm going to ask for questions. Then I'll continue into the second half of today's class, which will be on Shivaratri. So there's incredible history going on here about Vidura. Specifically, who is Vidura? Vidura was born of a Sudra mother. And the story is that Vyasadeva came to actually be the father of the Kuru dynasty. So he impregnated Ambika, but due to karma, Vyasadeva actually was a very strange-looking character, actually very fearsome and very, you could say, ugly. So as a result, Ambika, during the act of sexual union, she actually had her eyes closed. And the resultant birth, Dhritarashtra, who was born blind. Of course, we know he's blind physically, psychologically, and spiritually. He's blind. Then Vyasadeva, and he was the oldest son, so he was supposed to inherit the whole kingdom. But he couldn't inherit the kingdom because of his blindness. And Vyasadeva then impregnated Ambilaka, who was the mother of Pandu. But Ambilaka also was kind of like scared of this, the physical features of Vyasadeva, and she turned white and pale. So as a result, Pandu was born, and Pandu actually had a very weak constitution. He was actually like that. Then, so everyone was upset. You got a blind king. You got a king who's supposed to inherit the kingdom, who's also weak. So, okay, Vyasadeva does it a third time, but this time Ambika says, okay, look, here's my maidservant. You know, here's my maidservant, meaning the attendant of the queen's. And so Vyasadeva then impregnated her. I don't know her name. Does anyone know her name? The mother of Vidura? I don't know her name. But she was a Sudra. So Vidura then was the half-brother of Dhritarashtra Pandu, but he was born of a Sudra mother. Now the story is, and it's given here very nicely by Srila Prabhupada, and I'll try and put it into my own words, is that there was a sage, Manduka Muni, and you can imagine he's there living in the forest. He has his ashram. He's the guru. And all of a sudden, there's a group of supposedly sincere brahmacharis that come to him. But as it turned out, these sincere brahmacharis were thieves, taking shelter of Manduka Muni's ashram. But Manduka Muni was very compassionate. He allows them in. And within a few days, knocking on the ashram, become the constables, the police, saying, hey, we got some thieves running around. What happened? Are they in here? And Manduka Muni said, I don't know. Here, check around yourself. And the police came in and said, oh, here they are. They grabbed the thieves and they grabbed Manduka Muni because they thought Manduka Muni was part of the conspiracy. In other words, he was hiding the thieves in his ashram. He's probably going to get some of the money or something that they stole. So they took him in also. And then the magistrate, he, in whatever court system they had then, he sentenced them all to death. And the death was to be by piercing by a lance. Imagine horrible death. Being pierced by a lance. So on the day of the execution, you know, Manduka Muni's thinking, what's going on here? Why was, you know, I'm innocent. Why is this happening to me? I didn't have anything to do with these thieves stealing the money, but I'm being punished. I'm going to be punished. I'm going to be killed. I'm going to be killed by a lance. But he's a Muni. He's a great sage. He's a devotee. He's praying to Krishna the whole time. And then the news gets back to the king. And the king says, wait a second, we can't punish this Muni. He's a devotee. He's a great sage. So he pardons the Muni, stops the whole thing. So this Manduka Muni, he was very powerful, very powerful. Somehow or other, he went right to the court of Yamaraj. Now, I don't know of any sannyasis or munis in today's age and go right to the court of Yamaraj. But he was able to go right to the court of Yamaraj and say, okay, why did you do this to me? What did I do in my past? Well, I had to be punished this way. And then Yamaraj, of course, he has a big database. I don't know what kind of computer system they use, but some big database where they're accessing all the information. And they say, oh, okay, here it is. It came up here that in your childhood, you actually had sharpened a piece of straw and you had pierced an ant. This was your fault. You had pierced an ant with a piece of straw. Therefore, you are meant to be punished in this way. And then Manduka Muni is like, okay, you know, cut me a break. You know, I'm an innocent child, and I pierced an ant with a straw. This is not correct. This is unfair. You're a less intelligent person. You think you're so smart, but Yamaraj, actually, I'm telling you, I'm going to curse you. You're going to be born as a Sudra. So Yamaraj, of course, Yamaraj, he's one of the Mahajans. He's a great authority on Krishna consciousness. Later on in this chapter, also Narada Muni shows up, another great authority. And in a few moments, I'll be talking about another great Mahajan, Lord Shiva. So, you know, Yamaraj, he took it very nicely. He said, okay, you're cursing me. I accept it. You know, I'll be born as a Sudra. So that birth of Yamaraj as a Sudra, that is Mahatma Vidura. Very important to understand as we hear these different pastimes in the Mahabharata, in the Bhagavatam, and there's lots of conversations. Later on in the third canto, there's a whole several chapters of Vidura and Maitreya Muni speaking. Very important chapters. In so many ways, Vidura shows up in many pastimes. I don't have time to talk about it all. But the idea is here is that Vidura is internal, intrinsic, ontological, you could say identity, is actually a great Mahajan Yamaraj. So this is as we're reading through this chapter, there'll be a lot of references to Vidura. Remember that. Whenever you think of Vidura, think of this story. He was cursed by Manduka Muni. He's actually Yamaraj coming to be born as a Sudra, Vidura. And so Vidura, he was insulted, actually, in the assembly. Dhritarashtra had, right before the Kurukshetra War, Dhritarashtra consulted with Vidura and, you know, to get his advice. So, of course, Vidura comes in, but you have to understand, he's actually Yamaraj is a great judge. He's judging everyone. You know, he's very intelligent. So, actually, throughout this relationship with Vidura and his elder brother, Dhritarashtra, he was always advising him to, you know, hey, take it easy on the Pandavas. You know, you're exploiting them, being influenced by your son, Duryodhana. So again, right before the Kurukshetra War, Dhritarashtra asks for Vidura's advice, and to make a long story short, he basically says, look, give the Pandavas some land, call this off, you're going to end up at the horrible war, you're going to lose everything, it's going to be a great disaster. And then Duryodhana speaks up and says, who are you? You're a Sudra. I don't want to listen to you. Of course, Vidura's a great sage. but there's so much to be said about it. I can't get into all the storyline here. Maybe in future classes we'll be getting into more of it. But basically, Vidura said, okay, I'm out of here. put away his bow and arrow and left, went on pilgrimage. Boom. So Vidura left. He was actually gone on pilgrimage. How many years? I forget how many years. A long time. And he was on pilgrimage during the whole Kurukshetra war. So, yeah. So one point I want to bring out, though, is that because Vidura, his identity as Yamaraj, he's a great Mahajan, and so he didn't get angry when he was being chastised by Dhritarashtra. He just took it, this is all Krishna's mercy. I'm going. I'm out of here. I'm going to go to the forest. Because when you're going on pilgrimage, I mean, you know, those were the days before easy transportation and, you know, just depending on wherever you can eat food and where you can sleep is very difficult. He just took it all as Krishna's mercy. So this is supposed to be the mentality of every devotee. Every devotee is supposed to be this. And Prabhupada often quotes a verse, Tate nukampam sukshamina mano bhunjana ivatma kritam pikam katcha ridvak bapurdir vididham namaste jivetiyo mukti pade sadayabhak. And this verse basically is saying that I'm not going to protest. I'm not a great devotee of Krishna. Whatever I've done in my past, I deserve it, and I'm simply going to tolerate it. It all is Krishna's mercy. And by doing that, Krishna will give his mercy. This actually purchases your right to go back to Godhead. So throughout Prabhupada's teachings, books, lectures, conversations, he often quotes this verse. He even quotes this verse in reference to his own life when his business failed, his pharmaceutical business, the whole story, and I can't get into it. But and every devotee will go through these reversals. It's not everyone here sitting in the room will go through reversals in life. You have to see it as Krishna's mercy and tolerate it. And ultimately, you may not see it exactly at that time of those reversals, how it is Krishna's mercy, but ultimately, later on, in retrospect, you'll see how it is Krishna's mercy. So that's all I want to say about this part of my class today. I mean, I could say a lot more, but I also want to talk about Shivaratri. If anyone wants to make a comment or a question on this point, yeah. I can't hear you. Speak up.
They won't be cursed or something. They won't. It won't be taken into account. Do you know anything about this?
I couldn't quite understand your question.
He said that you're not allowed to kind of judge children anymore, like who do something.
Oh, is that part of the story too?
Yes.
I'm sure there's. I mean, there's details and details to this story. I just,
yeah,
you know, I can't. I'm sorry. I can't really, you know, elaborate anymore. So, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
If I'm not mistaken, I think Prabhupada says in the purport, that Vidura was born from Ambalika.
No, the maidservant.
Yeah.
The maidservant.
The
maidservant of the queen. Definitely, that's part of the story. The maidservant was a sudra. That's why Vidura is a sudra. He's born from Vyasadeva and the maidservant of Ambalika. Are you talking about Ambalika or Ambika?
Well, Prabhupada says
Ambika.
One of them, I think he made, so it's a mistake.
That's a good point, but I don't know the storyline to be of really, you know, whether it was Ambika or Ambalika, I don't know. I think I've heard both, so I don't know. But yeah, that's a point of clarification that I can't really. Maybe you know or someone else knows. Yeah.
It was Ambika. Cause,
Ambika.
Okay. In the Mahabharata, Ambika is the second daughter. Ambalika is the third one. Third one, obviously, was the one that begot Pandu. Then Satyavati went to the second daughter again, saying, look, try again. And then that's when Ambika then got her maidservant to go in her place.
Okay. Anyway, these stories are amazing stories out of the Mahabharata and the Bhagavatam. The point here that I'm trying to make is simply that understanding that Vidura is Yamaraj. He's a great, great Muni. And he was not appreciated. And he was not actually appreciated until he came back on his pilgrimage. And then when he came back to Hastinapur, everyone recognized him. Oh, look, it's Vidura. He's come back. And they treated him as a great sage at that time. And another point I could also make, just in, you know, another point of this point of the Bhagavatam is that in one sense we're all like Dhritarashtra. We're blind. We're blind spiritually. And by the teachings of the guru, our eyes are opened with the torchlight of knowledge. We all have the choice. Are we going to follow the saintly advice of Viduras that come into our life? Or are we going to follow the advice of the Duryodhans that come into our life? So in that sense, there's an analogy going on here also. And later on in this chapter, Dhritarashtra quits home. He actually takes good advice. And actually, at that point, anyway, you'll see in these future classes, the whole storyline unfolds. Okay, so I'm saving a little bit of time, not much time, but some time. I have a lot of information I'd like to share with you. I don't know how much I'll be able to share with you about Shivratri. Now, Shivratri in ISKCON is controversial. Prabhupada never really celebrated Shivratri, and so Shivratri in ISKCON is basically optional. Devotees can celebrate it, they cannot celebrate it. Basically, it depends on your own realizations, understanding, how to approach Lord Shiva. And it's a big topic, and it's a confusing topic. Srila Jiva Goswami says that there's two specific tattvas that are very difficult for devotees to really comprehend or really enter into a complete understanding. And that is Shiva tattva. And does anyone know what the other tattva is? Guru tattva. Many times devotees think, oh, I know what guru is. But I always say, think again. There's a lot of subtleties and nuances when it comes to guru tattva. Anyway, Shiva tattva also, many subtleties and nuances, and I'm going to try and go over some of the basics. And look, there's so many pastimes, but anyway, time is short. Even there's controversy in terms of the day. Is today Shivaratri or is tomorrow Shivaratri? There's ISKCON calendars that are saying that tomorrow is Shivaratri. But I was told today by the temple authorities, well, today is Shivaratri according to our calendar. So anyway, controversy is always going to be there, especially when it comes to Shiva tattva. So the main understanding that we have to understand when it comes to Lord Shiva is that he's almost as good as Vishnu. He is explained in the Brahma Sanghita to be, the comparison is, he is the yogurt transformed from the milk. In other words, yogurt is nothing but milk has become transformed. And that's Shiva. Shiva tattva is a separate tattva. There's Vishnu tattva, Shiva tattva, Jiva tattva. So Shiva is an enigma. Because he's not Vishnu, he's not Jiva. He's his own separate personality. So this is the understanding that Vishnu, coming in contact with a curdling. Has anyone made yogurt at home? Do you know how to make yogurt? You know how to make yogurt, Matsuji. You have to introduce a yogurt culture. You have to sour a culture. So what is that yogurt culture that Vishnu comes in contact? It's the three modes of material energy. That's the souring agent. In other words, Vishnu's in Vaikuntha, coming in contact with the three modes of material nature, he then becomes transformed into yogurt or Shiva. So this is the main point of understanding Shiva tattva. That understanding has to be clear. But as we go on, you'll see that there's ambiguity even in that. Also, we know that even today and in past generations, there's this argument that goes on. Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shishi Gonitai ki jai. Of course, before I get into that, I want to mention, on the altar here at the manor, we are worshiping Lord Shiva in a very special form. Can anyone tell me how Shiva is on the altar? Govinda, you know? Or Hanuman. Yes. Hanumanji. Just like Vidura, his internal identity is Yamaraj, Hanuman's internal identity is that of Shiva. So here, every day, we have to be conscious that actually Shiva is present on our altar. Now we think, oh, we don't worship Lord Shiva. He's a demigod. And I would say, well, it's a little more complex, a little more subtle. We are worshiping Lord Shiva in this form as Hanuman. Controversy is always there. Who is superior? Who is supreme? Shiva or Vishnu? And the Shaivites would argue with the Vaishnavas. Oh, the Vaishnavas say Vishnu is superior, supreme. Shaivites say, no, I have this Shastra and says Shiva is supreme. And then we argue and bicker. Even Lord Chaitanya, when he was visiting South India, he would listen to these arguments. He would not participate in the arguments, except he gave one simple analogy that clarified everything. He says, okay, Lord Shiva, he's taking the Ganges water on his head. And the Ganges water is the Charnamrita of Vamanadev, who pierced the outer covering of the universe, allowing Ganges to come in. And that Ganges washes over the foot of Vamana, and it becomes Charnamrita. So Lord Shiva is taking the Charnamrita on his head. So in a simple analogy, Lord Chaitanya said, obviously, Vishnu is supreme, using that analogy. So Lord Chaitanya, he would visit, actually, in his travels to South India especially, he would visit all the prominent temples of Lord Shiva. He would not neglect them. Sometimes devotees think that Lord Shiva is the enemy. He's not the enemy. He's Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. So how we understand how to integrate that principle into our life, that's a complex topic. So I wanted to read some purports as well as some quotes directly from Srila Prabhupada, what Srila Prabhupada says in terms of Lord Shiva. So we get it right from Srila Prabhupada. Okay, it is said, Vaishnavanamita Shambhu. This is from a purport in fourth canto of Bhagavatam. Lord Shiva is the best of all devotees of Lord Krishna. Therefore, all devotees of Lord Krishna are also devotees of Lord Shiva. Let me read that again. Prabhupada is saying, therefore, all devotees of Lord Krishna are also devotees of Lord Shiva. So we can't get rid of Lord Shiva. We're supposed to be devotees of Lord Shiva. And then Prabhupada mentions in Vrindavan there's a special Shiva's temple of Gopeshwar Mahadev, and the gopis would worship there at the temple of Gopeshwar Mahadev. And Prabhupada says, a devotee of Lord Krishna does not disrespect Lord Shiva, but worships Lord Shiva as the most exalted devotee of Lord Krishna. So sometimes we also hear that, oh, yes, we're meant to respect Lord Shiva. And yes, of course we respect Lord Shiva. But there's several quotes here I'm going to say, but where Prabhupada says that actually devotees are also meant to not only respect, but to worship Lord Shiva. So there's this subtlety here. Okay, here's from another Bhagavatam quote. Prabhupada says, not only are the devotees dear to Lord Shiva, but he respects them as much as he respects the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Meaning that Lord Shiva respects the devotees of Lord Shiva, of Krishna. Similarly, devotees of the Supreme Lord also worship Lord Shiva as the most dear devotee of Lord Krishna. They do not worship him as a separate personality of Godhead. He's not He's not separate. He's not independent. I mean, he's dependent on Krishna. He's actually Krishna transformed. So when we worship Lord Shiva as a Mahajan, as a Guna avatar, as one of the founders of a Vaishnava Sampradaya, Rudra Sampradaya, as a Vaishnava, that is the correct way. Now, generally, though, people approach Lord Shiva incorrectly. This is the whole distinction that's there in the Bhagavad Gita. If you're approaching the demigods incorrectly, then it's detrimental for your bhakti. One time in India, devotees were introducing Prabhupada to several important personalities, and they introduced him to a man who was a worshiper of Lord Shiva and Krishna. And the man was asking Prabhupada, is it possible to have pure devotion to Lord Shiva? And Prabhupada said, yes, that is possible, but generally that's not what happens. Then he made the distinction between bhakti and puja. In other words, when people approached Lord Shiva generally, the masses of people, they're performing puja, but that puja is like a business transaction. I do this puja, but I want this from you. So that's not pure bhakti. Bhakti is spontaneous and done without any ulterior motive of what's in it for me. But Prabhupada is explaining to the man, if you appreciate Lord Shiva as the topmost Vaishnava of Krishna, then you become purified. So let me read a little more. I don't have much time. I'll try and cover as much as I can. We are taught in the Bhagavad Gita not to worship the demigods. Why did Dhruva Maharaj take a benediction from a demigod? And Prabhupada says, the answer is that for a Vaishnava, there is no objection to taking a benediction from a demigod if it is favorable for advancing Krishna consciousness. And he gives the example of the gopis, worship Kachayani, but their desire was to have Krishna as their husband. So this is the subtle distinction. If you're approaching Lord Shiva with material desires, that will impede your Krishna consciousness. If you're approaching Lord Shiva correctly, Lord Shiva will help you advance in your Krishna consciousness. That's his function. I have so many quotes here. I don't have time. I'm going to go right to the gist of what I wanted to discuss, although there's much more here. I mean, this is the whole thing. Shiva Tava is a large subject matter. It cannot really be easily discussed in a few short minutes. But I want to get to a point of controversy. Now, I always tell the devotees, there's lots of controversies in Krishna consciousness. But controversy is actually a good thing in the sense that it'll help the devotees think deeply about the philosophy and how it applies to us. So controversy in and of itself is not a bad thing. So in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, which is a book by Sanatan Goswami, and it's been translated by Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, it goes over the 10 offenses to the Lord. Now we know from Prabhupada's translation, second offense is to consider the names of the demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, to be equal to or independent of the holy names of Lord Vishnu. Now, Sanatana Goswami gives another translation. This is where the controversy comes in. Listen to this. Okay, this is from from the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. There is nothing wrong with being attracted to Lord Shiva, since he is non-different from Lord Krishna. You think, what? Non-different from Krishna? Wait a second. How is he non-different? Lord Krishna, devotion offered to him is also devotion to Krishna. More precisely, when one satisfies Lord Shiva by pure devotion to him, Lord Shiva helps one become more devoted to Krishna. Then it goes into the this translation of the second offense. And this is how Sanatana Goswami translated. To consider Lord Shiva different from Krishna is a serious spiritual deviation. But this is a different part. The personality of Godhead tolerates offenses against himself, but not against Lord Shiva. Then it goes on to quote this second offense. And the translation goes like this. One who sees differences between any of Lord Shiva's qualities and names and those of Sri Vishnu is an antagonist to Harinam. Now, that translation is basically the opposite of Prabhupada's translation. If you're thinking Lord Shiva's qualities, names are different from Vishnu, then you become an offender. And this is coming from the Padma Purana, being translated by Sanatana Goswami. So I've been trying to make some sense of this. I consulted one of my Siksha gurus, Madhavananda, who is a disciple of Gaura Govinda Swami. And he gives an elaboration, very nice elaboration on this. He wrote me back. He says that there's two, actually, Sanatana Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who also translate this second offense this way, emphasizing the similarities of Shiva and Vishnu. And then he explains that the general meaning given by Srila Prabhupada and also Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Harinam Chintamani is what he calls the mukhyartha, or main meaning. It's the main meaning. So in what Prabhupada has given in his books is the main meaning, but there's a secondary meaning. So now we're getting into like, okay, now Shiva Tattva all of a sudden become very complex. A secondary meaning to the second offense, to chanting, you know, the holy names? Yeah, there is a secondary meaning. That secondary meaning is to see any difference between Lord Shiva and Vishnu. So time is short, but I'll try and summarize very quickly. The way that is understood is there's three important temples guarding the holy dham in Vrindavan, Mayapur, and in Jagannath Puri. These are the main dhams for the devotees, Vrindavan, Mayapur, and Jagannath Puri. So in Vrindavan, the protector deity, Gopishwar Mahadev. In Mayapur, there's two deities of Gopishwar Mahadev established by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And in Bhuvaneshwar, which is the... Actually, I have to distribute this before time runs out. And in Bhuvaneshwar is the another temple to Lord Shiva. It's called the Dikpalar, protector of the temple there in Jagannath Puri. So in all of these deities, the idea is that actually that Gopishwar Mahadev is non-different from Sada Shiva, and that Sada Shiva is the original Shiva, which is a Vishnu form in the spiritual world. This is the Shiva that is prior to being transformed into yogurt. In other words, this is a Shiva form, Vishnu form. Shiva, Vishnu, it's the same thing. It's actually milk prior to becoming in contact with the material energy, being transformed into the yogurt Shiva in the material world. So those deities, Gopishwar Mahadev, the protector deity, you cannot enter into the holy dham without going through this Shiva principle in Vrindavan, Mayapur, and well as in Bhuvaneshwar. The deity there, his name is Lingaraj. He's the king of Shiva Lingams. And he's also considered to be half Shiva, half Vishnu, or one in the same. So in this sense, if you can follow what I'm saying, I think I'm confusing myself now. In this sense only can Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu be considered equal. That's the only sense. Otherwise, that distinction has to be made. Okay. So I want to pass this around also. On this side, this is actually Gopishwar Mahadev in Vrindavan being worshipped by a great guru in ISKCON. This is Giriraj Swami. So I just wanted to show you here in Vrindavan, an ISKCON guru, sannyasi, Prabhupada disciple, is directly worshiping Gopishwaran Dev. It's okay. Also up here in the corner, I have a picture of Gopishwaran Dev. In the evening, he's dressed as a gopi. That whole story is there. I don't have time to tell. On the back here is a story of Srila Prabhupada. This is the temple of Bhuvaneswar. This is Lord Shiva. This is Srila Prabhupada. This is being drawn by my godbrother, Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhu, who is an artist. And he relates a story from Gaur Govinda Swami that is little known, where Srila Prabhupada directly was instructed by Lord Shiva to go to Bhuvaneswar. So that little bit is given here. So I'm going to pass this around. Please just take your time and look at this and understand that. There's so much I can say about all this topic. I hope I'm not confusing everyone. But the idea is that there is a way for the devotees to approach Lord Shiva correctly, and that is through Sada Shiva, the original Shiva. That original Shiva also is there in Advaita Acharya. And in Vrindavan, when you enter Vrindavan or when you enter Mayapur, you have to go through those deities of Gopishwar Mahadev. So the idea is then, Gopishwar Mahadev, Sada Shiva, Advaita Acharya, they are one and the same. This is the same identity. Now, if you can fathom that, you make a lot of advancement. I don't know. We'll see how you go. Anyway, time is up. I have to call it here. I'll try and clarify anything. If I've made any mistakes, please comment or say something. Please, someone have some...
Can you take a question?
Yeah, questions, of course.
Sada Shiva...
Sada
Shiva. He exists in the spiritual world. And
he's a Vishnu form.
Vishnu form, yeah. Yes.
And that Shiva, the picture of the Shiva Lingam I'm sending around,
yeah.
The idea is that's Vishnu.
Okay. Yes.
You see it as a Shiva Lingam, but yes. Actually the right understanding, that's Vishnu.
So is it unfortunate then that we get this aspect of Shiva, Lord Shiva, as a demigod? Because really, he's seen as a demigod, but that other aspect...
He's seen as a demigod to most... people who don't understand Lord Shiva. Yeah, a demigod, but he's Mahadev. He's the great Mahadev. Okay? He's the greatest of the demigods, and he's a separate category. He's not like any other demigod. Okay? And the point is he's Vaishnava Namita Shambhu. If you approach him as a Vaishnava, he'll bless you as a Vaishnava. You want the blessings of Vaishnavas, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Lord Shiva will directly empower you to develop love for Radha and Krishna. That's his power. That's his service.
So is that Shiva Tattva is so complex? Is that why it's not discussed in ISKCON, like generally?
In Prabhupada's books, he discusses it, and I had so many other quotes I wanted to say. I couldn't get to it all because time is short. So Prabhupada generally in his lectures and in his room conversations, unless the topic was brought up, he didn't really touch on it. But if you go throughout Prabhupada's books, there's many purports and many explanations about Shiva Tattva. And more clarification is given there by the Goswamis. Okay? Specifically, I wasn't able to read it, but... Rupa Goswami actually is giving glorification of Lord Shiva because it was Lord Shiva that instructed him to write Vidagdha Madhava. Personally came to Rupa Goswami and he's glorifying. And thank you very much, Lord Shiva. You've guiding me and inspiring me to write one of his main plays. So there's lots of literatures in Krishna consciousness that we don't even get into because there's so much that Prabhupada has given us. So when it comes to Shiva Tattva, it's complex. There's so much is there. The Goswamis would regularly worship Gopishwar Mahadev, Sanatana Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, would daily, on a daily basis, in Vrindavan, worship Gopishwar Mahadev. I'm not sure about the other Goswamis, but I know for those three for sure. So outside of Prabhupada's books, we also have the Acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and the Goswamis to look to for clarification on a difficult topic.
Well, thank you for giving us an angle of vision.
I'm getting this, a little glimpse. Believe this, there's so much more. It's a little glimpse. Any other questions? Because I don't want to go too long. Yes. Kamal?
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you very much for some clarification on a difficult topic. I know that many devotees actually, including myself, were worshippers of Lord Shiva before coming to Krishna consciousness. My question is that, especially for newcomers and spiritual seekers, and you touched upon how like Lord Chaitanya would often witness debates between Shaivites and Vaishnavas, and especially for a newcomer, they may read a scripture like the Shiva Puran, which cites Lord Shiva as Maheshwara and superior in position to Lord Vishnu and even Krishna. Obviously, we know from Srila Prabhupada's teachings through numerous examples in the Bhagavatam, which cements Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But how do we, especially for a newcomer who may read this, and isn't so familiar with Srila Prabhupada's teachings, how would we approach this?
Yeah, there are many people who come from Hindu backgrounds, and of course Shiva is there as one of the main deity forms. My suggestion is simply follow the example of Lord Chaitanya. If you're talking about the argument who's supreme, Shiva, Vishnu, yeah, there's the Shaivites will bring out their scriptures, and many of them are actually in the mode of Rajagun, Tamagun, so it's not actually clear like our main scripture is the Bhagavatam. But follow the example of Lord Chaitanya, because that argument is so simple and so sweet, and people will accept it. That Lord Shiva is accepting the Ganges water on his head. That Ganges water is Charnamrita. So who's superior, Shiva or Vishnu? Shiva's accepting the Charnamrita on his head. It's obvious. In that simple example that Lord Chaitanya gave, people say, oh, well, I never thought of it that way. Yeah, he does have the Ganges. And oh, yeah, it is the Charnamrita of Vamanadeva, who is Vishnu. And when they think about it, then they accept it. As Lord Chaitanya convinced all these, you know, these pundits were arguing. And he came in with a simple explanation, and it's like, oh, okay, no more argument. So when it comes to that point of who's superior, I think it's a simple explanation, and it cuts right to the chase. You don't have to get into tit for tat, what it says in this shastra, what it says in this shastra. You just say, oh, this is what Lord Chaitanya, I follow Lord Chaitanya. And it makes sense.
Thank you.
Yeah, over here, the lady's sign. I can't hear you. Please say it again.
In our daily prayers, how should we worship Lord Shiva? We ask him to help
Shri
us.
Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shri Vasudeva Gaur. Every time we're chanting Panchatattva, we're invoking Lord Shiva as Advaitacharya Sadashiva. And if you're thinking, oh, Advaitacharya Sadashiva, and I'm trying to make that connection, Sadashiva, Gopishra Mahadev, Advaitacharya, it's the same. So as soon as you're invoking Advaitacharya, you're invoking Gopishwar Mahadev. And Gopishwar Mahadev is there to help the devotees enter into Vraja Bhakti, Vraja consciousness. Actually, it's a whole topic. I can give a whole class just on this. But the Lord Shiva is there. His service is to keep the devotees out of Vrindavan. But he allows access into Vrindavan if you go through that Shiva principle, which is He's not letting anyone into Vrindavan who has ahankara, false ego. If you got ahankara, get out. Okay. He's not letting anyone into Vrindavan who has material desires. You got material desires? No place in Vrindavan. So in that sense, when you're invoking Advaitacharya in the Panchatattva mantra, thinking also, of course, it's a little different with Hanumanji, but for specifically Advaitacharya, Sadashiva, Gopishwar Mahadev, understanding this is the principle I need to work on. Ahankara, material desires, if I can work on those issues in my life, in my devotional practices, I can gradually enter into an understanding of Vraj Bhakti, enter in Vrindavan, even enter into Rasalila. But Shiva, as Gopishwar Mahadev, is guarding Rasalila. That's, anyway, I can't get into a whole explanation. That's, I think, the best way I can explain it, though. Okay? Yes, Prema Bhakti.
I think we have a Lord Shiva, Shivalinga in Radha Madhava's in Mayapur town. We have a little Shivalinga there. I think it's, the Gurukul worships that also in Gurukul.
There is a Shivalingam in Sridhar Mayapur, yes, in the Pujari room.
That's right. That's what I'm talking
about. You
know,
but this is the one you're talking about?
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I know the history of that one. In Sridhar Mayapur, because Jnanivas Prabhu personally showed me the Shiva Lingam. He took me into the Pujari room of Radha Madhava and showed me, oh, they have a Shiva Lingam. They're in the Pujari. Now, what's, you have to think, what's Lord Shiva doing in the Pujari room of the headquarters of the Hare Krishna movement in Mayapur? He explained to me. Jnanivas explained to me. This Shiva Lingam was given to him, and he decided to put it in the Pujari room in the area, which just like here, you have the area where you're transferring the Lord's plates. So in Mayapur, it's a little more complex. They have a big area there for transferring the Lord's place. And they have shelving there. That's where they put the Shiva Lingam. And he instructed the devotees, as you're transferring the Lord's plates, you're also offering the prasadam of Radha Madhava to Lord Shiva. It's a mental thing. You actually, it's not like any formal chanting of mantras, but they're doing that. And this is actually correct. Then that prasadam of Radha Madhava becomes Maha Maha Prasadam. Now the analogy is there in Jagannath Puri, where the offering comes off from Lord Jagannath and it goes to a shrine there within the compound Bimala Devi. Now Bimala Devi is Durga. But it's the same principle, Shiva, Durga. So they offer everything to Bimala Devi. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave the name to Bhaktisiddhanta. His first name was not Bhaktisiddhanta. His first name was Bimala Prasad, the prasadam of Bimala Devi, knowing that because it's offered to Bimala Devi and then distributed, it's Maha Maha Prasadam. So that's there. In a lot of devotees don't know about it. Yeah, go ahead. Yoga Pit.
Also in the Yoga Pit, we have a Shiva Linga there also.
Two Shiva Lingams.
Right, two.
Those two Shiva Lingams were installed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as well as Bhaktisiddhanta, who assisted him. There's a whole story there. I've actually tried to do a little research work on this, and it's not really clear. But basically, there is an area halfway between the Mayapur ISKCON campus and Yoga Pit. Okay, going along that Bhaktisiddhanta Road, if you're going from ISKCON to Yogapit, it's on the right side. It's like an acre of land. It's shaped into like a triangle there. That land belongs to ISKCON. That land is called Shiva Doba. Shiva, okay, you know about it, Shiva Doba. So that Shiva Doba, that's the area where Bhaktivinoda Thakur discovered in the ground these two Shiva Lingams, brought them to Yogapit, named them Gopish Mahadev after the Gopish Mahadev in Vrindavan. So he established there because Lord Shiva manifests the Bhaktivinoda Thakur that way. And he said, okay, as you're entering the holy dham then, now you have the Dikpala, you offer your obeisances to Lord Shiva there at Yoga Pit, then you can actually, you're entering into the dham correctly. So yeah, so a lot of devotees don't know these stories and these nuances. Anyway, I could say a lot more, but time is short. Anything else? Yes, Vinda.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. You said that when we say the Panchatattva pranam, when we say Advaita Acharya's name, it's Lord Shiva.
Sadashiva.
Sadashiva.
Make that distinction. This is the point. Sadashiva is different from Lord Shiva. That distinction has to be made.
But we always heard that Advaita Acharya is an incarnation of Mahavishnu.
Yes, yes. This was discussed previously on Advaita Acharya's appearance day, in that distinction. Govinda Puma, maybe you can clarify that. What was it, a letter that Prabhupada clarified this? Where?
Obviously, when you read Prabhupada letters, you don't get the question, but we can deduce the question. Is Advaita Acharya Sada Shiva or Mahavishnu? And Prabhupada said, from Mahavishnu expands Sada Shiva, and from Sada Shiva expands Advaita Acharya. So you can say Advaita Acharya is the expansion of either of them.
Right.
So that's how Advaita Acharya is an incarnation of Mahavishnu, but also an incarnation of Sada Shiva.
But that Sada Shiva is a Vishnu form. That's the point. So that clarification, that Sada Shiva is the milk, Lord Shiva is the yogurt. It gets a little complex. I'm sorry. That's the way it is. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. I can't hear you. Say it again.
It's a speculation, actually.
Say into the microphone.
Okay. I'm just speculating, but Lord Shiva, is he not in charge of all the dhams before you can enter the dham? I mean,
yes.
Is it possible?
The correct way to enter Vrindavan Dham has been given by Srila Rupa Goswami. And again, there's some subtleties here. First, you go to Bhuteshwar Mahadev. There's five important Shiva lingams in Vrindavan Dham. One of them is Bhuteshwar Mahadev in Mathura. And by approaching Bhuteshwar Mahadev, Rupa Goswami says, he frees you from all your sinful activities. Then by offering obeisances properly to Bhuteshwar Mahadev in Vrindavan, these are ancient Shiva lingams. You've got to understand, these are like 5,000-year-old Shiva lingams established by Vrajanab, the great grandson of Lord Krishna. So these have been there a long time. Then Rupa Goswami says, and Lord Chaitanya followed this also. This is an example given by Lord Chaitanya. First in Mathura, Bhuteshwar Mahadev. Then when entering Vrindavan, then Gopeshwar Mahadev. Then, if you do it correctly, with the right consciousness, Gopeshwar Mahadev, on this subtle, ethereal, Krishna conscious level, he allows you entrance. If you don't do that, then the idea is basically you're there in Vrindavan, but you're more like a tourist than actually trying to understand what is, you know, Vrindavan consciousness. I think we better end there before I get into trouble for going too long. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shivaratri Mahotsava Ki Jai.